The following program is not a production of Audio Journal. External programs like this are selected with the interests of our audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed in this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This is Paul, reading from the April 2026 National Geographic magazine, a continuation of the article entitled 33, Visionaries, Austin Ruda and Reng Nuhung Ji, the scientists pushing the frontiers of vision. Using laser pulses to activate a subset of the eye's photoreceptor cells, vision scientists Austin Ruda and the University of California Berkeley electrical engineer Ren Nyunghu Ji recently led a team of UC Berkeley researchers who induced test subjects to temporarily see a color beyond the limits of normal human perception. They called the color Olo, and Nuhung Ji describes it as, quote, "the tealest teal you've never seen," end quote. Ruda, now at Ontario University of Waterloo, says the novel laser stimulation method that led to it can help doctors replicate and better treat symptoms of degenerative eye disease. He and other researchers are already testing its potential to repair color blindness. Olo, he says, quote, "is the tip of the iceberg," end quote. Written by J.R.G. Continuing with Article 33 from the National Geographic, a creator, Titus Esposito Canete, the ocean ecologist democratizing deep sea science. To get people to care for the deep, Titus Esposito Canete says, quote, "you have to make them see with their own eyes," end quote. In the Philippines, the National Geographic Explorer is making the view more accessible. Deep-sea cameras can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. The ones he built, first deployed last year, can be made from regionally available parts for all of $1,500. They've already captured little documented reefs and species, yielding data that will aid a push for new marine protected areas. Written by J.R.G. Continuing with the article entitled 33 from the April edition, April 2026 edition of National Geographic Magazine, a creator, Francis Kere, the architect designing sustainable solutions for a rapidly changing world. While Francis Kere became the first ever African laureate of the prestigious Pritzker Prize in 2022, the judges behind the, quote, "Nobel of Architecture," end quote, praised his efforts to, quote, "change unsustainable patterns of production and consumption," end quote. But today, sitting in his studio in Berlin, the Burkina Faso-born architect admits with a shrug that the very concept of sustainability was, for much of his career, foreign to him. Quote, "I had no clue what that is," end quote, says Kere, now 60. Quote, "everything I was doing was born out of sheer necessity," end quote. Kere's work has earned global acclaim over the past 20 years, and lately he's in high demand, with a trio of megawatt projects in Las Vegas, Brazil, and Germany, all in development at once. But these have come only after decades of honing his vision in service of, as he says, sheer necessities, building schools, clinics, libraries, and other structures across Africa. Undertakings defined by Kere's innovative use of local materials, creative techniques to help buildings cool, and relentless commitment to community buy-in. Consider Gando Primary School, built 25 years ago in Burkina Faso, and today praised as one of this century's most significant works of architecture. When Kéré, on a break from his studies in Germany, told the people of his home village of Gando that he wanted to build them a schoolhouse out of mud bricks, his neighbors balked, demanding one made of concrete and glass, like the buildings of Europe. But clay, Kéré explained, was plentiful and cheap. A concrete building would need air conditioning, and Gando didn't have electricity. Clay bricks would absorb heat, keeping the schoolrooms cool. And the building Kéré had in mind would have two roofs, a vaulted clay one, patterned with small holes for ventilation, and a wider overhanging tin roof above it. The tin roof would shield the clay, and heated by the sun, draft cooler air up from the classrooms below. In the end, the people of Gando didn't just approve his design for the school. They were so taken with his vision that they decided to help build it. Now, the ideas that Kéré began exploring in that era of his resume are starting to take shape outside of Africa on a grand scale, with several projects currently underway, including the Las Vegas Museum of Art, which aims to open in 2029, Kéré's first major North American commission, the Biblioteca dos Sabares in Rio de Janeiro, no target completion date, his first commission in South America, and the Museum Erhard in Plouzchau, Germany, expected to open late next year, his first European museum. As Nigerian architect Kule Adeyemi, Kéré's friend and colleague, points out, the architectural world is watching to see how Kéré will, quote, continue to scale up ideologies that are rooted in more traditional forms of architecture and local materials and local techniques, end quote. Kéré wants to show that even in a place like Las Vegas, an energy-devouring desert metropolis, reliant on air conditioning, and one of America's fastest warming cities, we can build in ways that complement nature rather than fight against it. Yes, this time he's using concrete, a structural necessity. But the 60,000-square-foot museum will be clad in locally sourced stone, a ventilated facade that both mimics the red rock surroundings and allows heat to escape, which will help keep the building cool. The Rio Library, meanwhile, will be constructed with clay bricks, and the Museum Erhard will primarily use rammed earth and wood. All three will feature some of Kéré's signature passive cooling elements, like canopy roofs, perforated exteriors, and natural ventilation towers that circulate air, drawing on hard-won lessons from working in a region that's warming faster than any other, says Nana Mbiema Ofosu, a Ghanaian British architect and critic. She sees Kéré as a leading figure in, quote, African Renaissance of architecture, end quote, prompting a global rethink of how structures are sourced and designed. Quote, drastic climate change, this is already happening on the African continent, end quote, Mbiema Ofosu says. Quote, to learn from Africa and take it as a place of deep knowledge is really important for the survival of humanity, end quote. To facilitate that learning, Kéré is expanding a training and research center he founded in 2018 in a city near Gando called Kengo Dogo, where some 200 Burkinabe workers have acquired skills to help carry out his projects in Africa. This year he plans to open up the center to architects, designers, and craftspeople from across the globe, with a 5-year goal of teaching 2,500 people how to build elegant, energy-efficient structures out of clay, wood, rock, adobe, and other vernacular materials. Quote, I see it as a challenge, end quote. Revise that. I see it as an exchange, end quote, he says. Quote, we have something positive from the continent, something that is so good that other people would love to benefit from, end quote. Just as the villagers of Gondo once asked him for a building like the ones they've seen in Europe, Kerry hopes the rest of the world will aspire to build from the example of Africa. Written by Paul Kvinta. Continuing with the article entitled 33 from the National Geographic, a visionary, Benedetta Gori, the forager reimagining the future of food crops. Modern agriculture grows too few crops, says Italian botanist Benedetta Gori, so it's vulnerable to climate change and disease. While some overlooked wild plants may be, quote, not only a way to diversify our diet, but to make our agriculture more resilient, end quote. Part of a vanguard of intrepid field botanists building libraries of plants we might cultivate, the National Geographic Explorer just finished a survey of 2,700 Mediterranean wild edibles. Now she's lab-testing promising seeds like Brassica tyrina, a cabbage cousin she harvested off of sea cliffs, where it withstands extreme heat, drought, and salinity. Quote, it is also delicious, end quote, Gori says. Written by J.R.G. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic, 2026 April edition. An icon. Priyanka Chopra Jonas. The actress changing the global conversation around diabetes. As the daughter of two doctors in the Indian military, Priyanka Chopra Jonas grew up spending a lot of time at the hospital while her parents were on call. A medical career was not in the cards. Quote, I am squeamish even at my own cut, end quote, she says. But one experience assisting her mother and father in a rural village left an indelible impression. Quote, it helped me recognize that where you're born really changes the trajectory of your life, end quote. Her own path took her from teenage pageant queen to one of the world's most in-demand actresses, making history as the first South Asian woman to lead an American network drama with Quantico, produced by ABC, which shares a parent company with National Geographic. Along the way, Chopra Jonas has become intimately familiar with an unrelenting health crisis happening back home, which spans villages like the one she visited as a child to dense urban centers. India is facing a diabetes epidemic affecting more than 100 million people. Perhaps even more alarming, about half of all Indians living with the disease remain undiagnosed, due in part to stigmas and misapprehensions. Today, as Chopra Jonas prepares to take a role in Varanasi, the upcoming blockbuster breaking records as one of India's most expensive movies, she is working on a campaign encouraging people in India to recognize the signs of diabetes and to successfully navigate the disease, a timely mission that also happens to be deeply personal. When Chopra Jonas began dating musician Nick Jonas in May of 2018, she knew little about diabetes. Type 1, which Jonas was diagnosed with at age 13, is an autoimmune condition caused in part by genes and environmental triggers, necessitating lifelong insulin therapy. Type 2 is prompted by genes and lifestyle choices, among other factors, and only sometimes requires insulin. By the time the couple married just a few months later, she'd seen firsthand the conscientious monitoring type 1 requires. Quote, "I used to wake up in the middle of the night sometimes just to see if he was breathing," end quote, Chopper Jonas says. But she also came to understand that, with early detection and proper treatment, diabetes need not be a limitation. Over the past 5 years, Chopper Jonas has spread that message as a board member of Beyond Type 1, the nonprofit Nick Jonas co-founded in 2015 to reduce stigmas and direct people to life-saving resources. At first, Beyond Type 1, which has a digital community of more than 90,000, was largely focused on the needs of those in the United States. But this past December, with Chopper Jonas's input, the organization launched an education campaign about type 1 in India. While the country has the highest number of children and teens with type 1 in the world, quote, "awareness is really low," end quote, Chopper Jonas says. Many people are either unfamiliar with the symptoms or afraid a diagnosis would render them unable to work or marry. Quote, "the desire to keep it secret is ridiculously strong," end quote, says Deborah Duncan, CEO of Beyond Type 1. To nudge people toward early diagnosis, Beyond Type 1 created a video last fall featuring real Indians living with Type 1, from a young karate champion to a pastry chef. After Chopper Jonas shared it on Instagram, the video garnered 279 million viewers. Beyond Type 1 offers online resources in Hindi, Marathi, and Tamil, and recently gave $500,000 to fund other Indian organizations promoting early detection. As a result, almost 200 people have signed up to be Beyond Type 1 ambassadors in India, helping raise awareness by hanging posters, visiting clinics, and pushing for change on an international stage. While this effort specifically targets type 1 in India, it may arguably shift the stigma around the disease for all diabetics in the country. Last September, Beyond Type 1 brought one of its new ambassadors to a health-focused UN General Assembly meeting to speak about living with the disease. Each of the ambassadors' stories is different, but they all share an underlying message, the same one Chopper Jonas is broadcasting. Quote, "don't be afraid of the diagnosis," end quote, she says. Quote, you can handle and live with this condition and actually thrive with it," end quote. Written by Molly Langmuir. Continuing with the article entitled 33, the National Geographic Magazine. An adventurer, Carlton Ward Jr. The nature photographer using media to notch environmental wins. Having coined the phrase, quote, "Florida Wildlife Corridor," end quote, to describe a patchwork of 18 million acres of habitat in his home state, it's no surprise that National Geographic explorer Carlton Ward Jr. believes in the power of branding to help save places. His photos of elusive Florida panthers drove a successful campaign to protect those acres. Now, Ward is globalizing his strategies with the Connected Planet Initiative, partnering with the National Geographic Society to fund a worldwide, quote, "army of photographers and filmmakers," end quote, to win support for wildlife corridors via powerful images and stories, stirring connections that spur action. Written by JRG. Continuing with the article entitled 33, National Geographic Magazine, A Creator, Stella McCartney, the eco-conscious designer funding sustainable fashion. At Paris Fashion Week last fall, Stella McCartney's models walked the runway wearing pastel feather dresses. Fake feathers, though. The designer's spring-summer 2026 line incorporates the world's first plant-based alternatives, which McCartney calls, quote, just as magical and breathtakingly beautiful, end quote. A pioneer of eco-conscious couture, she co-founded a $200 million green fashion fund that supports startups developing responsible materials, like kelp-based yarn and leather made from spent wine grapes. Such innovations aren't always priced for everyday buyers, but McCartney, who says she's, quote, obsessed with working with waste, end quote, is out to show that even the typically disposable world of fast fashion can embrace greener supply chains. This spring, she debuts a new H&M line made with recycled fabrics. It all builds on work she's done for nearly a decade since partnering with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation to champion a roadmap for a circular textile economy in which clothes are produced renewably, worn longer, and then reused. Written by Rose Minutaglio. Continuing with the article entitled 33, the National Geographic 2026 magazine, An Adventurer, Ewan McGregor. The motorcycle-loving actor inspiring the world to hit the road. In Long Way Home, the latest installment of Ewan McGregor's epic motorcycle travel series, the actor found himself in Svalbard, the Norwegian archipelago almost at the North Pole. It was far from a tourist idyll. Coal mining has left a scar on the terrain. Nearby glaciers are retreating. And, just as a capper leaving camp to use the bathroom required an armed guard to ward off polar bears. Despite all that, McGregor gazed out at the surrounding tundra with genuine wonder. The journey to Svalbard was more than two decades in the making. In 2004, fresh off filming the Star Wars trilogy that rocketed his stardom to new heights, McGregor climbed onto his BMW motorcycle and set out to circumnavigate the globe, embracing the beautiful, the ugly, and everything in between. That trip, taking alongside fellow actor Charlie Borman, became Long Way Around, the first of four TV documentary series. It also marked the birth of his second career as an adventurer, offering unfiltered views of the world around him. Quote, we're encouraging people to go out into the world and look at it, end quote, McGregor says. Quote, especially these days, when everybody's becoming more and more attached to looking down to our phones, end quote. Between tidily packaged itineraries for social media consumption and worries about issues like sustainability, travel today can be tough. To all of this, McGregor offers a rousing counter-argument. Quote, there's an amazing sense of excitement when you're out on your own comfort zone, when you're out of your own comfort zone or your own cultural experience, end quote. Long Way Round, in which McGregor and Borman traveled from London, across Asia, and all the way to New York City, was followed by their journey along the length of Africa in 2007's Long Way Down. Then, 13 years later, they rode from Patagonia to Los Angeles in Long Way Up. For Long Way Home, the pair covered some 7,000 miles through 17 European countries, stopping at a reconstructed Viking village and visiting a paragliding center in the Alps. Rarely has anyone so joyously celebrated the act of exploration in all its exhilarating and messy glory. This is especially true of the visits connected to McGregor's ongoing partnership with UNICEF. Quote, "I just thought they raised money for kids who were in famine situations or natural disasters," end quote, McGregor says. UNICEF does do those things, but viewers of the Long Way series get a much wider view of UNICEF's work. From a rock climbing program for at-risk kids in Kazakhstan, to rehabilitation center for child soldiers in Uganda. One such stop from Long Way Round, at a center for orphaned and homeless children in Mongolia, led McGregor to adopt his daughter, Jaman, now 24. Quote, "The show's reach and popularity has given UNICEF the chance to put children, their stories and voices, front and center," end quote, says Philip Goodwin, CEO of UNICEF UK. One of McGregor's inspirations for Long Way Round was writer Ted Simon's classic motorcycle odyssey, Jupiter Travels. Simon once wrote, quote, "The challenge was to lay myself open to everybody and everything that came my way. The prize to change and to grow big enough to feel one with the whole world," end quote. It's a gospel McGregor has now spread to a generation. Outside a fishing hut in Norway, he and Borman encountered a young man on a motorcycle journey of his own. Quote, he said, "I used to lay in my dad's lap watching you two, and that's why I got a bike," end quote, McGregor remembers. Quote, "That makes you feel terribly old, but it was also a cool moment," end quote. Written by Brett Martin. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic. A creator, Catherine Zeeland. The roboticist designing tech that keeps us moving. Growing up, Catherine Zeeland loved taking mother-daughter hikes. Years after the declining health kept her mom off the trail, the former Google staffer took an interest in mobility-focused wearable tech. Now her company, Skip, is about to deliver its first robotic outerwear. Pants for the Arc'teryx brand that provide torque at the knee to aid uphill hiking, boosting leg power by 40%. They're a step towards products that could help sufferers of movement disorders like Parkinson's. Before her mom died, Zeeland says she tried a prototype, climbing four flights of stairs. Quote, "She hadn't done that in more than 30 years, end quote. Written by J.R.G. Continuing with the article entitled 33 from the National Geographic. An adventurer, Paolo Fasciulli. The fisherman saving octopuses with underwater museums. Paolo Fasciulli first made waves in Tuscany, where he lives and fishes, and in global conservation circles, for thwarting illegal trawlers by lowering dozens of marble sculptures onto the sea floor, where his underwater museum wrecks nets to destroy the seagrasses and reefs. Now he's targeting overfishing of octopuses. Working with local students, he's commissioning artful terracotta pots and dropping them by the thousands over fishing grounds. Well, they'll entice octopuses that otherwise seek shelter in fishermen's plastic traps. Quote, "The more we throw on the sea," end quote, Fasciulli says, quote, "the more octopuses we save," end quote. Written by Brian Kevin. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic. A visionary, Daniel Pidratita, the botanist rescuing endangered orchids from extinction. In the mountains above Medellin, Colombia, Daniel Piatatia is building an orchid Noah's Ark. Once a hobbyist grower, he's now launching seed-sharing initiatives with communities across Latin America, helping return some of the 3,000-plus species represented in his collection to areas affected by deforestation, wildfires, and flower poaching. Last year, he opened Alma de Bosque with an immense pavilion to house his 25,000 plants. He clones rare species there and harvests microscopic seeds by the millions, quote, so that nothing slips past us, end quote, he says, quote, so that we don't allow any plant to go extinct, end quote. Written by Alexandra Mava. Continuing with the Article 33 from National Geographic Magazine. Visionaries, Idris and Sabrina Elba. The power couple with a new vision for sustainable development. Sherbro Island, a tropical outpost of farmers and fishermen, nestled in the crook of Sierra Leone's arcing Atlantic coastline, is about the size of Chicago, but its population of 40,000 wouldn't even fill Wrigley Field. Electrical power and wireless internet are scarce. Fishermen can't refrigerate their catches long enough to sell them on the mainland, and farmers often lack the expertise and equipment to harvest much more than they need to survive. But Sherbro Island has some enviable resources, including miles of unblemished beaches and lagoons, as well as an abundance of replenishable fresh water. One other invaluable asset, the support of Golden Globe-winning British actor Idris Elba and his wife, Canadian model Sabrina Elba. The couple see an opportunity there to marry ecological sustainability with economic growth in a way they hope can be a template for development projects across Africa, and perhaps help rewrite a whole continent's narrative. Idris's father is from Sierra Leone. Sabrina's mother is from Somalia. And growing up, Sabrina says, quote, there were particular stigmas attached with being African, end quote. She remembers seeing ads that seemed to show abject people waiting for a handout. Quote, we wanted to see Africa represented the way that we knew it to be, end quote, she says. Quote, we wanted to change the storytelling, end quote. Her husband, known for the baritone potency he brings to prestige TV dramas like Luther and The Wire, along with films like last year's critically acclaimed thriller, A House of Dynamite, first heard about Sherbro Island years ago. A close family friend had tried to convince him it would become a world-class holiday destination. Quote, at that juncture, I was just like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting, end quote, says Idris, 53, who co-owns a wine bar in London's King Cross neighborhood. Quote, like, maybe I'll build a nightclub, maybe build some tourism, end quote. He made a mental note to visit someday. He got the opportunity in 2019. While he and Sabrina, now 37, were in Sierra Leone touring small family farms as part of their ambassadorial roles with the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD. It was during that trip, Idris says, that he had something of an epiphany. He had been venturing into philanthropy as his celebrity grew, supporting childhood education and hunger relief programs in Africa, as well as campaigning on behalf of at-risk youths in the United Kingdom, work for which he was recently knighted. But on that trip, the Elvis saw an opportunity to build something more enduring and meaningful than a fancy vacation spot, and, quote, to reframe the conversation, end quote. Sabrina says, quote, from one of aid to one of investment, end quote. Soon after, the couple launched the Elba Hope Foundation, a way of bringing all of their philanthropic endeavors under one umbrella, including an initiative to help empower small-scale farmers on Sherbro and across Sierra Leone. Among other things, the program involved guidance on sustainable farming methods and resources to help cocoa and cashew farmers form cooperatives and access credit. Building that kind of capacity isn't a matter of cutting checks, says Marsha Reed, the foundation's executive director, but of, quote, time and training and education and investment, end quote. That early focus on agriculture was a natural extension of the Elba's work with IFAD, which had given them, quote, a master class, end quote, Sabrina says, in how to support, quote, farming that doesn't damage the planet, that protects rural people, that allows them to have a means and a way to economically support themselves, end quote. But the scope of their ambitions for Sherbro Island has only continued to grow. Last year, the Elba's commitment to the island took a huge step forward with the launch of a three-year initiative called the Hope Power Project to electrify and wirelessly connect the entire island. They're doing it by joining up with some deep-pocketed corporate partners, brands that Idris says gave the right answers when he asked. Quote, do you want me to just wave a flag and get some likes? Or are you interested in our ideas? End quote. Octopus Energy, for instance, one of the UK's largest energy providers, is building a wind and solar farm, including 5 wind turbines, and training Sherbro Islanders how to operate them. ServiceNow, an AI workflow company for which Idris is a spokesperson, is helping finance solar and clean water infrastructure. The Hope Power Project will change lives on the island, and the Elvis see it as laying the groundwork for further green development in the years to come, eventually transforming Sherbro into a self-supporting, renewably powered, quote, eco-city, end quote. Quote, do we want to continue throwing concrete up and putting calluses on our world, or do we want to build structures and cities that actually nourish our world, end quote, Idris asks. Quote, what are we going to teach the next generation about how to build and develop? And can Sherbro be a blueprint for that, end quote. He knows how ambitious it sounds, but with ambition, focus, and commitment, he says, quote, you become more than just a celebrity putting their name to something. You become a member of a working engine, end quote. An engine powerful enough maybe to help a small rural island tell a whole new African story. Written by DG. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic magazine. An icon. Luis von Ahn. The app developer breaking down language barriers around the world. When Duolingo co-founder and CEO Luis von Ahn realized his gamified language learning app had become a teaching tool in refugee camps, he knew he could do more to help. His company waived fees for over 135,000 displaced and low-income students on its English proficiency test, used by thousands of North American and European universities for foreign admissions, and partnered with the UN Refugee Agency on admissions counseling. Von Ahn, who emigrated from Guatemala to the United States as a teen, says that facilitating global migration, quote, is honestly not what we thought we would be doing, end quote. But the app's free course offerings, dramatically expanded last year with an AI assist, are empowering those who need language learning most. Written by JRG. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic. Adventurers. Borge Usland and Vincent Colliard. The duo skiing across ice caps to measure their decline. Last June, Norwegian National Geographic explorer Borge Usland pulled his French adventuring partner, Vincent Colliard, out of a crevice on Canada's Ellesmere Island, miraculously unscathed. The mishap nearly ruined the 16th and longest expedition of their Ice Legacy project, a quest to ski across the world's 20 largest ice fields, gathering first-hand data on ice sheet fractures that satellites can't. Ice samples they collect help glaciologists gauge climate change effects in places humans rarely glimpse. They have four ice caps to go, each no less daunting. Quote, we keep on doing it, end quote, Colliard says. Quote, for the sake of what's at stake, end quote. Written by JRG. Continuing with the Article 33 for the National Geographic. A visionary. Lauren Eatwell. The engineer reducing emissions by giving cargo ships wings. A former competitive sailor, Lauren Eatwell led the design of steel and fiberglass sails that can be retrofitted onto cargo ships. Her wind wings function like vertical airplane wings, generating thrust that can cut a vessel's fuel usage by a third. Last September, the first all-new ship affixed with the sails completed its maiden voyage, and more new-build vessels with sails are on order. That's big. The shipping industry accounts for roughly 3% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Quote, if you can make a difference there, end quote, Eatwell says. Quote, you can make a real difference, end quote. Written by JRG. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic. A visionary. Martin Wachelski. The biologist discovering new wildlife threats from space. The satellite-borne receiver that National Geographic explorer Martin Wachelski's team sent into orbit last fall is something of a protector. It allows Icarus, Wachelski's project, to track the movement, behavior, and health of animals, from insects to songbirds to ungulates, fitted with the tiniest of sensors. Wachelski, director of Germany's Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior, calls it nothing less than, quote, a new Earth observation system, end quote, and it can solve mysteries that surround declining species by capturing critical data about, say, migration routes and habitat corridors, as well as signs of distress among populations otherwise invisible to researchers. A companion satellite is set to launch this spring, and Wachelski expects to have up to 10,000 animals tagged by year end. The longer-term goal? 10 times that. Written by JRG. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic magazine. A creator, Margaret Wickens Pierce. The cartographer re-envisioning how maps communicate indigenous knowledge. The river that most contemporary maps label, quote, Mississippi, end quote, a French adaptation of an Ojibwe name, is undoubtedly one of the world's most charted. Not incidentally, it's also one of the most manipulated, levied, diverted, dredged, and dammed to control flooding and ease passage for commercial traffic. Most contemporary maps of its 2,350-mile course reflect all that engineering. But cartographer Margaret Wickens Pierce, who works out of her home studio in coastal Maine, is concerned with all that those maps don't show. How the Mississippi looked before the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers reshaped it, and how indigenous people living alongside it, past and present, have adapted to its fluctuations and flood cycles. Pierce believes that revealing those layers of understanding, amplifying indigenous knowledge, history, and presence, can inspire us to more sustainably address issues like habitat loss, aging infrastructure, and increasingly severe flooding. It's why Pierce, a citizen Potawatomi tribal member and National Geographic explorer, is promoting a vision of an indigenized Mississippi with series of large-scale map installations placed along it. The project, which she calls Mississippi Dialogues, is a collaboration with tribal nations whose traditional territories include the river, and it aims to correct what Pierce calls a, quote, pervasive misunderstanding, end quote, of the Mississippi as a line, a thing to be crossed or traveled up and down rather than a living artery at the heart of many homelands. Quote, what we see now is all Army Corps maps, end quote, she says. Quote, we just see the locks and dams, the ways that the river is controlled and paved, and this map is opening up an unpaved river, end quote. The project is a high-visibility example of an indigenous-led movement, both within and outside the field of cartography, to challenge what generations of mapmakers, historians, and policymakers have chosen to prioritize and reclaim what they've left out. But Pierce's work is no simple rebuttal. It's an artful reminder that maps can be more than scales or diagrams. Hers are repositories of stories and memories. They are text-rich with narratives that unspool a few lines at a time across soft washes of color. And they link eons of history, showing modern highways wending past details from creation stories and sites of 19th century colonial violence. Packing all that into a legible map requires painstaking effort. A map set she recently finished of Inuit homelands in Canada, commissioned by the University of Maine, took more than 200 drafts to complete. That's not the only way in which Pierce's work rewards patience. Her Mississippi project is 7 years in the making, years she spent visiting tribal communities, elders, and the culture bearers all along the river, collecting stories and insights about what river stewardship she weaves into the maps. She seeks permission to learn and to share indigenous place names considered cultural property, though some knowledge remains reserved for indigenous communities, and her maps might encompass the homeland of dozens of peoples. Even mapping her own backyard involves significant legwork. To make a map depicting place names in the Penobscot language, Pierce spent 3 years visiting sites across Maine with Carol Dana, a language teacher and elder from the Penobscot Nation. Dana praises the cartographer's way of working, which she says is about more than just relabeling. Quote, trying to make people more aware of the place names that we named them originally, end quote, Dana says. Quote, for us to see it and experience it, it heals us, end quote. Increasingly, it's not just tribal nations and organizations embracing this approach. Last year, Pierce became the first ever cartography-focused recipient of the prestigious MacArthur Fellowship, an $800,000 prize popularly known as the Genius Grant. It will help fund the Mississippi Project's first two installations of an Envision 14 to be put up as soon as this fall in a city park in Minnesota and at a nature preserve in Illinois. Pierce knows others look to her work as a blueprint for what, quote, indigenous cartography, end quote, can be. But she rejects the label, believing that mapmaking is, quote, infinitely expandable and flexible, end quote, with many means of mapping indigenous ways of life. Quote, the more I hear the idea of indigenous cartography pushed into a corner and labeled as a particular way of mapping, end quote, she says. Quote, I just really want to smash that open and show people that it's an entire world of possibility, end quote. Written by Joseph Lee. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic. A visionary. Rohit Chandra. The computer scientist saving lives with AI. Former tech executive Rohit Chandra was new to healthcare when he took aim at one of the biggest challenges, sepsis, an over-aggressive immune reaction to infection that kills up to 1,000 Americans daily, and for which there's no test. Chandra partnered with a clinical team to design an AI system that can aid in diagnosis by factoring a patient's vitals, alerting staff to potential infection and the timely need for antibiotics. In 2025, the AI tool rolled out to 25 hospitals in Ohio and Florida. Next up, Chandra is building similar AI recognition platforms to reduce hospital readmissions and automate outreach for cancer screenings. Written by JRG. Continuing with the Article 33 from the National Geographic 2026 issue. A creator. Aaliyah Bhatt, the actress putting animal welfare in the spotlight. Aaliyah Bhatt grew up in Mumbai surrounded by animals, in large part because her sister Shaheen wouldn't stop bringing home stray kittens. There are millions in India, and they often arrived at the Bhatt household in terrible condition, starving or with infections. At one point, their mother attempted to stop the parade of ailing kittens, so the girls would smuggle their patients into their room and hide them there as they convalesced. Quote, it was compulsive almost, Bhatt says. My heart opened up very young, end quote. That love of animals would stay with her into adulthood. Today, as one of Bollywood's most recognizable actresses, with almost 90 million Instagram followers, she is using her massive reach to highlight animal and environmental welfare through film projects, a series of children's books for the next generation, and campaigns to take action. Quote, I was in this position where I started to question whether my voice had quality, end quote, she says. Quote, I said, okay, let me go to something that I feel very passionate about, and that is animals, end quote. Bhatt's tactics are creative, varied, sometimes even cat-centric. Eternal Sunshine, the production company she founded in 2021, has a logo featuring two cats. Bhatt was an executive producer of Poacher, the 2024 hit miniseries based on a real elephant poaching investigation in India. Eternal Sunshine also has partnered with the Eco Film Festival All Living Things to encourage filmmakers to turn their lens on the environment. Quote, stories have such an amazing way to impact our minds, end quote, Bhatt says. Quote, once you tell a story, it's there forever, end quote. Stories can have an especially profound impact on children, and Bott is authoring a series of children's books, The Adventures of Ed-A-Mama, about a girl named Alia and her adopted dog, Ed, who go on adventures to help animals. The first book is called Ed Finds a Home. This effort builds on her successful sustainable children's clothing and product label, also called Ed-A-Mama. Kids have a natural excitement about animals, Bott said, describing how her young daughter, Raha, points out every dog when they're on drives. She hopes to help children hold on to that enthusiasm, as she has. Another inventive initiative. Mi Wardrobe is Su Wardrobe, or Misu, a concept where Bott sells her clothes and those of other celebrities on the resale platform Dolce V to extend the shelf life of garments, thereby reducing landfill waste and helping, quote, the wider ecosystem of circular fashion in India thrive, end quote, says Dolce V founder Komai Hirandini. In doing so, Bott is also channeling funds into a constellation of charities, with proceeds benefiting organizations like the Bombay Natural History Society, a nature conservancy. When she doesn't contribute funding, Bott contributes visibility through Coexist, the online platform she launched almost a decade ago to amplify the efforts of eco-friendly companies and charities. Bott does not claim expertise in the many issues she champions. Quote, by normalizing learning, questioning, and gradual change, she makes conservation and sustainability feel approachable, accessible, and possible, end quote, says Dorita D'Souza, who works with Bott on her philanthropic endeavors. Her contagious curiosity is a through line to all her initiatives, and is complemented by her compulsive empathy, undiluted since childhood. Written by Lauren Lawson. To be completed at my next reading.
This is Bird Note. Peer into the world of birds, and eyes of many different colors peer back. There are shades of light and dark, yellows, whites, greens, the red eyes of certain hawks, ducks, loons, herons, and songbirds. These colors really pop, because birds have no white around the iris like we do. So the yellow eyes of a great horned owl or a herring gull seem to give the birds a fierce, penetrating glare. While eye color isn't tied to one group of birds or another, a pattern common to many birds is a change in eye color as immature birds grow to adulthood. Bald eagles, ring-billed gulls, ducks such as Goldeneye and Scalp have brown eyes as youngsters and yellow as adults. Red-tailed hawks reverse this pattern, with their eyes changing from yellow to brown, while the yellow eyes of a young Cooper's hawk turn deep red as it reaches maturity. Not all birds' eyes change color as the birds age. But for those whose eye color appears to signal adulthood, this is likely an adaptation that helps them gauge the maturity and suitability of potential mates. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.